is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, hoop heads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish home machine. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Coach Pascal Meurs from Belgium, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering new subscribers 10% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code SAVE10 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball.
Coaches, do you have a point guard or leader you're going to be counting on next season to run the show for you? Don't leave next season to chance. Thousands of coaches send their players to a point guard college camp each summer to learn to think the game, lead a team, and run the show. Your players will be smarter, better leaders, and better equipped to foster a championship culture next season in practice and in your locker room. I've seen firsthand how PGC camps have had a huge impact on players and coaches that I know, both on and off the court. You can go to pgcbasketball.com to find a 5-day, 4-night camp near you. That's pgcbasketball.com. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel, who is off in the state of Maine celebrating his wife's birthday anniversary, something I should know probably better, Jay. But anyway, I am here with another Jason, Jason Pop, my former colleague as a coach at Richmond Heights, and he was gracious enough to jump on with us tonight. Popster, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Klins. It's fun to be here.
Absolutely excited to have you on and talk some NBA. You and I have been trading some texts back and forth over the course of the playoffs here and there. So I thought it'd be interesting to get you on and get some of your thoughts here as we head into the NBA Finals. Tonight's game one, as we were talking before we jumped on, was kind of interesting. It was a hard game to really get a feel for just because there were some odd statistical quirks and just things that, I don't know, I have a hard time wrapping my head around how they translate moving forward. So what were your initial impressions of this game?
You know, to begin with, I was kind of surprised that Giannis played in this game. That sort of shocked me to see him out there to start. And then, as we talked before, of how well he played, they seemed to give him more time off, you know, than they usually do in games. But, I mean, he showed pretty well. I mean, I think some of his movement was limited for sure, but he surprised me of how much how good he was on the court.
Absolutely. I did not expect him to play in this game, in all honesty. I think once it comes down to if he's good enough to play, you might as well play him. And clearly, I mean, he may have been slightly hobbled, but for the most part, I thought he moved really well. I thought he did normal Giannis things. As you said, he sat a little bit more than he has in this playoffs. Although if you go back and you look at previous playoffs, this is probably how many minutes Bud played him in the two previous playoff seasons when they went out earlier than they should have. So he kind of reverted back to that. But I think if you're Milwaukee, to me, that's the most encouraging thing you take out of this game, is that he was actually able to play.
Yeah, I think that's the positive they have to take into Thursday's game. I sort of figured that they would figure, you know, if they can get away with one in Phoenix, sit him the first one, play the second, and hope to steal the second one and head back to Milwaukee with that. But I think it's definitely a positive that he was as mobile as he was on the court. Now, if they can just stop him from taking three-pointers, then they'll be okay.
Yeah, there was a lot. Like I said, there was some weird statistical things. Like, you really look at the difference in this game was the free throw line. So Phoenix gets to the line with 26 times. They don't miss until Crowder misses one of that, the very last free throw that they took of the night. And Milwaukee gets there only 16 times, and 15 of those, well, 12, I guess 12 of those are Giannis's free throws. So Brook Lopez goes 0 for 2, is normally a pretty reliable free throw shooter. And that really was the difference. Milwaukee makes 16 threes, shoots 44% from three, which usually you would think that's a pretty good sign. And they shot 45% from the field. Not great, but certainly not terrible. And it just was a weird game. It never really felt like, after that beginning of the third quarter, it never really felt like Milwaukee got where you felt like, ooh, man, they're right back in it. I know they cut it to 7 a couple times there in the fourth quarter, but it never really felt like Phoenix was in jeopardy. And yet, I felt like Phoenix had Chris Paul play a great game. DeAndre Ayton plays a great game. Booker, although he didn't shoot it well, still got to the line and went 10 for 10. I would say Booker played well. And yet, I don't know. It felt like a game that could have been there for Milwaukee. They're just a weird team. Watching Milwaukee play is eminently frustrating if you're rooting for them. I don't know how you feel watching them.
they're such a Jekyll and Hyde team. You know, when Giannis was out, you know, Middleton stepped up, you know, a little bit, and he did in the second half a little bit tonight too, and hit some shots that, you know, some really contested threes and contested shots. Holiday seemed to disappear a little bit today, where when Giannis was out, he was taking charge a little bit more. I sort of felt like they never really got Lopez involved in the game. You know, they never really, whether it was getting him down low, whether it was, you know, isolating him or letting him pop out. I mean, he hit a couple threes, but, you know, nothing that he ever became dangerous. You know, a couple games ago, when it was, he went off for what, 30 some points or whatever it was. And, you know, defense had to account for him. They just never, I feel like they never run an offense. Every time it's one-on-one, whereas sort of Phoenix is the polar opposite with Chris Paul running the show. Is, you know, they're always setting something up. There's always some screen somewhere. There's guys moving across the baseline, screening across, pinning down. You know, they're always looking for the open guy cutting to the basket.
It seems like Milwaukee, as you said, they always are in isolation, and they just never get all of their guys playing well at the same time. It seems like, okay, Middleton's got it going, and then Holiday is dribbling the ball off his foot out of bounds or getting stripped. And then Giannis is having a good game and he's scoring, but then you're not getting very much out of Lopez, or PJ Tucker shooting 0 for 7. Or it just feels like they just never all get it going. And one of my big things that I keep saying over and over again when I watch Milwaukee is Middleton and Holiday, for two guys who have the ball in their hands as much as they do, it just seems like so often they dribble the ball off their foot, or they get it stripped, and they just have goofy, silly turnovers that are just eminently frustrating if you're a Bucks fan. And I think when you talk about the other side of it with Phoenix, Chris Paul, obviously one of his key characteristics, one of the things that he does really well, is he doesn't turn the ball over. And as you said, he always gets them a good shot. It just seems like they always are getting a good shot, whereas with Milwaukee, it always feels like it's an adventure what kind of shot they're going to get. And that those guys, it just doesn't seem like they can get them all going at the same time. It feels like, man, if you could get a good Middleton game and a good Holiday game, you'd have a result like you had in what, game 5 of that Atlanta series, where they just completely run the other team off the floor. But that happens so infrequently. It's like either one or the other is playing well. And if they could just get them both going at the same time, it feels like they'd have a lot more success.
Yeah, I think tonight's game was, you know, it showed what a true point guard does in the NBA. You know, Chris Paul, I know, is not your average point guard, but a guy who orchestrates from the top, you know, is getting guys set in the right positions, as opposed to just a guy playing point guard who's looking to score and, you know, maybe get a guy involved here or there. It, you know, like you said earlier, the stats were really close between the two teams, except for the trips to the foul line. I mean, the shooting percentage was pretty close. You know, made and attempted threes was pretty close. It's just that Milwaukee had so many, it seemed like they have so many more empty, you know, trips down the court where they just didn't get a good shot, or somebody was shooting in traffic while three guys were, you know, standing around and watching. And then I think that sort of translated onto the defensive end. Milwaukee didn't play great defense, standing around a lot. You know, there was one point there at the end where somebody missed a shot. I can't remember who it was, but Ayton just sort of came down the lane and dunked it on a miss. And Holiday was sort of standing there watching. Lopez had been pulled away to stop the drive, and it was a baseline drive. And that was just kind of a microcosm of their entire defense, you know, that they were just a step behind, it seemed like, the whole night defensively.
Yeah, there was another possession where there was a turnover, and I think it was Booker kind of had that run out, and whoever, I can't remember, I think it was Giannis who chased it down, and then there were four Suns that came running into the picture with no Bucks to be seen. I think they must have thought that Booker was going to have a breakaway and just lay it in or dunk it without any resistance, and Giannis somehow got back there, and then nobody else had crossed half court. So yeah, those are the kind of things that you got to be a little bit frustrated with if you're Milwaukee and thinking about being able to control what Phoenix does. And the challenge with Phoenix is, one, obviously Chris Paul is getting you into sets and getting you into things and is orchestrating. And if he's going to play as well as he played tonight, I mean, the last two games that he's put together, the game to clinch against the Clippers in game six, and then this game tonight, I mean, if he's going to play this well, Phoenix becomes really, really difficult to beat. I mean, really difficult to beat. I just don't know how you combat him playing that well. And, you know, it's interesting because clearly Jrue Holiday, what he did in game six of the Eastern Conference Finals defensively, like he was everywhere and just stripping the ball and being physical. And he's such a good defender. But because of all the screen and roll and because of all the switching, it's like, okay, we can put Holiday on Chris Paul. But then you just see that every time Holiday's on Chris Paul, they just orchestrate a screen roll to get Holiday switched off of him. And then he ends up going against Connaughton or somebody else who's a lesser defender, which, again, is the strategy that all NBA teams use. But you start thinking about the value of these guys as defenders and trying to set the matchups and talk about who guards who. And ultimately, it's like who starts on who when the possession really doesn't matter. It's who finishes on who when the plays are being made. And it just seemed like Phoenix was almost always able to get somebody switched on to Chris Paul that he felt like he could attack. And I don't know how Milwaukee, I don't know what adjustments you can make there where maybe you have to start out with a bigger defender on Chris Paul. Maybe PJ Tucker has to spend more time guarding Chris Paul out of the initial action. So when you do switch, you have a different guy guarding Chris Paul. And of course, you have the same problem with Booker. He's so good. He's so good in the mid-range. And again, he didn't shoot it well, but got to the line and went 10 for 10. So I'm not sure what Milwaukee can do differently with those two guys other than hoping that Chris Paul cools off a little bit.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, as I watch this game, and I'm not the biggest Chris Paul fan, but it just kind of seems that this is their year. I mean, things broke just right for them in the Western Conference. You know, it just sort of seems like they're, you know, Chris, like you said, Chris Paul's getting hot here, you know, when it really matters. You know, Milwaukee is the Jekyll and Hyde. It just seems like it's Phoenix's to lose. You know, they're going to have to drop the ball to not come away with a championship, I think, out of, you know, next week or week and a half, however it takes.
Which is ironic when you think that most people had them losing to the Lakers. And I think had Anthony Davis stayed healthy, I think there's a pretty good chance that they probably would have lost to the Lakers in the first round. So you have that one injury that changes things. Now, that's not to say that Phoenix couldn't have won that series, because they certainly could have, but I think the consensus would be that with Anthony Davis, the Lakers probably advance, and then you have a 7 seed beating a 2, and Phoenix is looking around going, hey, we had a great year, went 8-0 in the bubble last year, and now we made it to the playoffs and got to be a number 2 seed, and yeah, we couldn't beat the defending champs, to now they're looking at, I mean, their chances of winning the title at this point are pretty good. And yet I look at this game tonight and I still say, I don't know if Chris Paul can play this well. I mean, if he plays this well every game, like I said earlier, this series is over. I mean, there's no way that Milwaukee's going to win this series if Chris Paul is going to average 32 and 9 and shoot you know, whatever, above 50% from three. It's not happening for Milwaukee. I don't know if he can sustain that or not. And then Ayton, 22 and 19, was phenomenal again tonight. And he's had a tremendous playoffs, and we can kind of touch on that here in a minute, just his development and what a key that's been to Phoenix's rise here in, you know, in these playoffs. And then Booker, I would say, had an average game. Didn't shoot it real well, but as I said, made up for it at the free throw line. He's going to be tough for Milwaukee to contend with. So I feel like those three guys had really, really good games, and yet Milwaukee can look at it and go, man, if the free throw disparity wasn't quite so wide, and man, we had it to seven, if we could just get one or two more things to go our way, we're right there. And they got to feel good, like we said off the top, that Giannis, I mean, nobody expected him to play 2 days ago. I don't think anybody really thought he was going to play. And now he comes back and plays, puts up 20 and 17, plays 35 minutes, and doesn't seem to be showing any huge ill effects from that hyperextended. He certainly was not timid in the way that he played. I mean, he went to the basket hard. He had that crazy chase down block. And I mean, and he's landing in traffic. He was in no way, shape, or form afraid of re-injuring that knee, which to me, again, is a good sign for the Bucks going forward, because without him, I just think they have no chance if he's not playing at his best. And I don't know if tonight was his best game, but certainly what you saw out of him, if you're Milwaukee, has to be encouraging. And that's what make the game, that's why, like I said, what made this game strange is, again, Chris Paul, great. DeAndre Ayton, great. Booker, pretty good. Bridges shot the ball well and had a lot of nice contributions on both ends. Cam Johnson had a nice game. And yet, Milwaukee, I don't think anybody on their team, I would say, played a really good game. Middleton had a nice stretch there when they were down 20 to kind of keep them in it. But if you're Milwaukee, you're going, man, nobody on our team played exceptionally well. They had two guys who had great games, and we still were right there on the road. So if I'm Milwaukee, I walk out of this game feeling at least, I mean, I certainly don't feel like I'm out of this series. I certainly don't look at game two and go, oh man, I don't know how we overcome this. I think you say to yourself, hey, if we could just slow down Paul and control Ayton a little bit, Giannis is going to continue to get better and improve, and hopefully we get a good Holiday or Middleton game, or maybe, holy cow, maybe they play well together at the same time, and then we really got a chance. So
yeah, I think you know, Bud's basically got to give the speech after that you just gave. You know, he's got to convince them that they played well below, you know, their abilities, and they were still right there in the fourth quarter. You know, got it down to 7 points, so that it's only in their benefit, you know, in their favor, if they can, you know, they can turn some things around, that, you know, they can be right there, that this is theirs to win, you know, from their point of view. It just comes back to, you know, all the Bud criticisms. You know, can he make changes going into game two? You know, can they do some things differently? And then again, you know, what's Giannis going to be like after putting 35 minutes on that knee in a couple days? Is he going to be able to come back just as strong? And if he does, then the Bucks have a real shot. You know, he'll feel, I mean, like you said, he had no apprehension about jumping, taking off, you know, on the block. He almost landed on top of the guy that he, you know, I mean, but, you know, he, like you said, no apprehension there. And I think there would be less if he comes back and feels good, you know, their walk through tomorrow and game on Thursday. But they've got to, you know, change some things, work some things out, you know, maybe use their size a little bit more. Maybe go, like you said, Ayton had a great game. Maybe you have to go at him a little bit more. Maybe try to get him in some foul trouble, some cheap fouls early. Don't let him get in a rhythm. You know, do some things to take Phoenix out of what they like to do instead of just sort of playing into, you know, their strengths.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think that whoever Ayton is guarding, whether it's Lopez or whether it's Giannis, I think that it might be to the Bucks' benefit to try to maybe force feed those guys a little bit. I mean, now what's interesting is the only time Lopez really gets the ball in the post is when he has a smaller guy on him. And he's not really ever when he's posting up. It's more in like semi-transition where he kind of pins the guy in the lane and then they throw that lob up towards the rim and he either just dunks it off the catch with one hand, or sometimes he'll grab it and then shoot that little floater that he has. But it's rare that he's like on the block posting up in a traditional way. And I think that they could benefit from trying to do that a little bit with Ayton, as you said, to get him in foul trouble, especially Not that Saric is some great backup center, but the fact that Saric went down with that knee injury and didn't return, and who knows what his status is going forward. I haven't seen anything about that since the game ended, and clearly he's not one of the most important players. But if you take out Saric's minutes, either Ayton has to play more, or you're playing somebody out of position who doesn't normally occupy those 15 minutes that Saric might play, which again could be something that the Bucks could exploit by going down in the post. I mean, we hear it with Giannis a lot. I'd still like to see him just go and put his back to the basket and just power through guys and shoot that little jump hook or that little kind of floating push shot that he's developed a little bit more over the playoffs. It just seems like when he gets the ball on the block, that with his athleticism and length and strength down there, that if it's anybody but Ayton, it just seems like he should be able to completely overpower them and get whatever shot that he wants. And, you know,
yeah, his athleticism should take over down there. His arms and hand, just the length of his arms, you know, should be able to get it up pretty easy against anybody else.
You would think, but again, I know that's not necessarily his game, although it's certainly come around. I mean, we saw a lot in the Brooklyn series, him isolating against Blake Griffin, and then we saw it in the Atlanta series a little bit before he got hurt, where it seemed like, again, he's not a guy you want facing up from 19 feet and saying, hey, go get me a basket. But I feel way more confident in him today posting up if I need a basket in a critical moment than I would have a year ago, let's put it that way.
For sure. I'd even like to see him maybe try a little high-low, but bring Lopez as the one to the foul line and Giannis be the one, you know, down there. And, you know, they do it once in a while, and it's reverse. They always bring Giannis up to the elbow. But, you know, Lopez can hit that shot without, you know, he's not the one that's going to necessarily drive to the basket, but he can hit that 15-footer. I'd like to see them clear that out, get a little dump pass into Giannis, you know, so there's not converging on him. Just let him go against the one guy, you know, quick touch passes down low and just get him some easy stuff. I think one thing Milwaukee, you know, I can't say that I watched them, you know, a ton, you know, all year, but it just seems like they haven't gotten to the point where they're comfortable playing both bigs at the same time and have a plan for what they want to do with them. You know, Lopez is always floating out to the corner and, you know, trying to leave the middle open, and there's not cohesion a lot of the time when they're together.
Yeah, I feel like they use Lopez primarily with the idea that he's going to pull the other team's opposing big man out to the three-point line. Like, that's what I feel like they use him for the most. And again, there's value in that, especially when you have Giannis and you want to keep the middle clear. Like, there is value there.
For sure.
But I also think when you have a smaller guy that's in there, you have to in some way punish that smaller guy. If you're going to play small, Lopez is a guy who, you think back to early in his career, he's a guy who spent a ton of time on the block,
right,
and was probably one of the best low post players in the whole league. And it's not like that's a skill that disappears. So it still feels like you could kind of lean into that a little bit. And again, I don't think you want to have Brooke Lopez posting up 30 times a game.
No.
But when he's got a smaller guy on him, when Jay Crowder is trying to guard him, or when Mikal Bridges is trying to guard him, or even if Kaminsky or Saric comes in, it seems like, hey, let's at least throw it into him and see what he can do. Maybe he kicks it out for a three. Maybe he draws a double. He's a decent enough passer that he can find cutters or find somebody else to get the ball to if he himself can't overpower the guy that's down in there with him. So it would be nice to see them do a little bit more in the post with both Lopez and Giannis. But who knows? It goes back to what you talked about, Bud's sort of reputation as, can he be the guy who's made adjustments? And to his credit this year, there's definitely been some things that he's done differently. I mentioned one earlier that the last two playoff runs, Giannis and Middleton were playing like 33 minutes a game. And I used to just completely tear my hair out going, how can you, here's all these other teams that their stars are playing 44, 46 minutes a game, and you're sitting these guys an extra 10 minutes compared to the other team's stars. No wonder you're losing games. Like, your best players, like even tonight, I'm looking at the plus minus here in the box score. Giannis is plus one, and he's the only starter that's not in negative double figures. So look, when your stars are out of the game, guess what happens? Your team usually doesn't play as well. So why not push those guys out? I mean, the game 7 against Brooklyn was a great example. Look, even a tired Giannis or a tired Durant, those guys need to be on the floor because they impact winning in so many more ways than just what they're actually doing, because teams have to be worried about them and teams have to account for them. And it's good to see Bud make that adjustment. And obviously there's been lots made of them kind of changing up their coverages on defense, becoming more of a switching team, whereas in the past they just only did Lopez, you know, dropping off into the lane and trying to protect the basket and giving up mid-range shots. And I think going against Trae Young and going against Durant the last two rounds certainly has helped them to understand that, look, because they're facing two more guys that live in the mid-range with Booker and Chris Paul. So it's not like they don't have experience dealing with these guys, but I think you got to give them different looks. And like I said, it may be just a matter of starting the matchups different with Chris Paul so that you end up without one of the guys that Chris Paul would like to attack. It'd be nice to be able to have them finish a possession with PJ Tucker or Drew Holiday on Chris Paul instead of having them end up with Bryn Forbes or Pat Connaughton, which are more favorable matchups, obviously, for the Suns.
Yeah, just anything to make it a little bit – I mean, if you can make it a little bit harder on Chris Paul to hunt out that, you know, that matchup that he wants, take a few more seconds off the clock, anything to disrupt their rhythm a little bit is going to benefit you on that defensive end if you're Milwaukee. You know, just walking into that screen and switch in or, you know, doing the drop coverage, you know, that's what they're expecting. You have to switch it up just a little bit, like you said, even if you do it beginning of the game and then come back to something you're more comfortable with. But at least start the game on Thursday with a little bit of a different look to make them, you know, pause a little bit and not let Phoenix get in such a rhythm, you know, early like they like to do.
And Chris Paul's been making that shot for 15 years. I mean, that shot's been his bread and butter for the entirety of his career. And so you can say, hey, that's a low percentage shot, or analytics says that's the shot we want guys to take. But man, I mean, he's shot it his entire career, and he's playing really, really well right now. And if he continues to play this well, as I said earlier, I don't know that Phoenix can be beaten if he's going to play that well. And so Milwaukee, as you said, they got to do something to disrupt what Phoenix is trying to do and come out in game two. And typically you think of game one of finals, and what happens in game one isn't necessarily indicative of what's going to happen in the rest of the series. And I think what we saw tonight is some really good performances from Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton. If those two guys play that well, this series is a wrap, but I don't think they will. I think Milwaukee will make some adjustments. I think they'll come back and play better. They're just maddening to watch because they just make a lot of plays that you're like, gosh, why'd he get stripped there? Man, he's dribbling down on the baseline and Middleton dribbles it off his foot, or Drew Holiday loses it in traffic. And yet at other times, Middleton makes crazy circus shots and Drew Holiday dudes just bang off him as he goes to the basket. Sometimes he makes so many of those left-handed drives where guys are bouncing off him like pinballs. It's sometimes you're like, man, how strong does this guy have to be able to just have guys, you know, again, it's not like he's LeBron size. I mean, he's whatever, 6'5", and dudes are bouncing off him like nothing. So there's something there. I think this is going to be a long series. I really do. I think both teams are pretty evenly matched. I think when you get great performances like Phoenix got tonight, if those performances come for the Bucks on Thursday night, it's going to be a different story. Milwaukee probably comes away and wins this game. I think if I'm Milwaukee, the thing I'm most encouraged about is Giannis' health and the fact that he was able to move, he was able to play. He maybe had, as you said, played maybe a couple less minutes than he might have had he been completely healthy. But the fact that he was out there for 35 minutes, and hopefully his recovery over the next 48 hours gets him in good stead to be able to play on Thursday night and come back strong. And I think it's going to be a long series. Before the series started, I was leaning toward Bucks in six, just because of the home court advantage and winning a game seven, although the Bucks have already done that against the Nets. But I'm still leaning. I mean, I guess that means Milwaukee's got to win four out of the next five. But I'm still leaning towards the Bucks. I don't think that the Suns have an answer for Giannis. I think he's going to get better as the series goes along. And I'm weirdly confident that for some reason Middleton's going to continue to play well. And if they can get Drew Holiday going, I think they'll be okay.
Hey, hoop heads, we all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com/teampricing to learn more. That's ARYSE.com.
Yeah, I'm not convinced that Chris Paul can play, you know, the way he has the last two games for an entire series. And I think that for Phoenix to win, you know, he's going to have to do that, you know, against this Milwaukee team. You know, Booker's going to get his points and Ayton is going to get his. But for them to, I think to beat Milwaukee, Chris Paul is going to, you know, going to have to be something spectacular almost every night. And he has been. To his credit, the last two games, he has done that. You know, usually you'd let him shoot the three. And now he's, you know, he's making, you know, step back threes. And, you know, those are shots you want him to take, you know, in most seasons. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think it's going to go, you know, six or seven. I think Milwaukee has just as good a chance, even after losing game one, you know, to come out and change some things around. Like you said, they could come out Thursday and win by 12 or 15 points if they start clicking. And all of a sudden, you know, everybody's going to be talking, you know, differently come Friday morning.
Yeah, when I look at the series and I think about Chris Paul, one of the things that I was struck by as I was kind of looking at the schedule, and I was thinking about this more in terms of Giannis, but I think it also has an impact on Chris Paul when you think about him being an older player and being at the tail end of this run this season and the number of games that they've played and how many minutes he's having to log and the load that he's carrying. The fact that there's so many three-day breaks in between games. So obviously we play Tuesday, Thursday, but then we don't play again until Sunday. Don't play till Sunday. And then after Sunday, you don't play again until Wednesday. And so having more than 48 hours between games, you'd think has to benefit a guy like Chris Paul in terms of his recovery and being able to continue to play at a high level. And look, his history over the last 5, 6, 7 years says at some point he breaks down and he gets an injury or he tweaks a hamstring, or tonight, even when he twisted his ankle, when Lopez comes out on him to challenge a jump shot. By the way, I mean, I don't know, like I've played a lot of basketball defense in my life and I don't know how you're supposed to contest a shot if you're not allowed to come toward the guy who's shooting. And especially when the guy who's shooting oftentimes is not blatantly like Booker where you're kicking one foot out, but a lot of guys, you just shoot and naturally your body's kind of coming forward. And so the defender has to be coming towards the offensive player. For that to be called a flagrant foul to me is completely ridiculous. Now, could it be called a foul? Sure. But to call that flagrant, and I get why they're doing it. I understand the Kawhi, Zaza, Pachulia history of the whole thing. But to call that a flagrant foul, I mean, I don't know. To me, that's crazy.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that. And, you know, Van Gundy goes on his rants during the telecast, which are great to listen to, about, you know, basically the good old days and how, you know, how they're playing now isn't basketball. But, you know, you and I have had some conversations over text during games. Like, I don't know how you're supposed to play defense in the NBA anymore. You know, I get, like you said, what they're trying to do, protect the shooters, and they're coming down. But it seems like every shooter's jump, you know, landing forward when they're shooting their jump shot these days. So, like you said, you can't even close out. And then to make that a flagrant, it's just you're really handicapping the defense on closeouts. I mean, these guys are, you know, sprinting from, you know, 15 feet away, trying to get a hand up. I get protecting them, but all the flagrant fouls on this stuff, I don't know how you're gonna keep going on with basketball that way. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, you mentioned it too when you think about just guys coming off the screen roll, and if you're gonna fight over the top of the screen as a defender, and then the guy who's dribbling off the screen just suddenly stops as you're fighting through the screen and you bump into him. And then the guy, not only does he get the foul, but then the guy's throwing up some junk shot that gets him three free throws. It's ridiculous. I was watching tonight and there was one possession where Jrue Holiday was picking up Chris Paul full court. And I think it was either Crowder and Ayton at some point. There was like five screens set for Chris Paul between the top of the key on the one end and the top of the key on the other end. And Jrue Holiday's like banging into the screen every screen's a moving screen because the guy setting the screen is, he's technically rolling or trying to pick and pop, whatever, but he's clearly not set and he's moving and then he's kind of pivoting into the guy. So you got, not only are you fighting over the screen, but then you got to continue to fight it for like 10 more feet as you try to get around the guy's pivot and his roll to the basket. And just like you said, as a defender, I don't know what you're supposed to do, because if you're going to fight hard over that screen and then the guy's just going to stop and like jump back into you. That's why, like, even that Booker call where they called him for kicking out his leg, I was glad to see that. And normally, I guess I theoretically, as a player, I think about myself, like, I'm biased towards the offense. Like, I want calls when I'm on offense so I can get to the line. But now watching it as a fan, you're like, as you said, it's ridiculous. Like, I don't know how you're supposed to defend someone when you can't close out hard and come underneath them. You can't fight through screens because the guy might stop and dive back into you. You can't go for any head fakes because the guy's going to clearly just do a Superman jump into your body as soon as you leave your feet whatsoever. It's just really, really difficult as a defender to figure out and how to navigate it. And so, which makes, when guys do have a great defensive game like Holiday had in game six, and you just see the guys everywhere and his hands are active, and it just gives you a ton of respect for guys who are able to, especially perimeter players that are able to guard multiple positions and switch and get through the screens and still close out and do things. And that being said, these guys offensively are just, it's ridiculous how skilled NBA players are today.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. The things they can do, ball handling. I mean, just the change of direction. I know they, you know, there's no such thing as carrying the ball anymore, palming it. You know, everybody's turning it over. You know, they were calling it 20 years ago.
It is nice to be able to do that. I have to say, if you could play the game where you can just always put your hand underneath the ball,
it does
and
help.
Take another half step, and that really helps.
Well, I mean, you come at a guy and you can hold that ball an extra half second on one side before crossing over and get that defender to, you know, shift his weight. That's all the difference in the world to crossing over and getting your body in front of him at that point. But yeah, how gifted the offense is. And I'm sure you could have multiple podcasts on how that trickles down all the way through AAU and that it's offensive minded all the way through the AAU circuit. And you know, this generation coming up now is basically growing up with, you know, let's score as many points as we can.
And kids are more skilled. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that kids today across the board at all levels, we've talked about that on here before, that the 12th man on a high school team today is way more skilled than that 12th man was 30 years ago. I mean, you no longer see the 6'2", 215-pound football player who just screens and rebounds and knocks people around. Like, that guy doesn't really exist anymore, because that kid now can knock down threes or can do something with the ball that a kid 30 years ago wouldn't have even dreamed of being able to do.
No, you're right. You know, it used to be, you know, you were filling out your back end of your team roster. Like you said, those last three or four guys were, you know, like you said, screeners or just a rebounder, you know, this type of guy. Now you've got, you know, all the way down to high school, the 12th man is a kid who's played, you know, AAU his, you know, since he's in fifth grade or fourth grade. And, you know, he's only does basketball and can shoot the lights out and just wait for an opportunity type thing.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about Brook Lopez. Look at the transition in his game from being a guy who strictly played on the low block for the first 7 or 8 years of his career to now he spends 80% of his time spacing the floor outside the 3-point line as a 7'1",
right,
285-pound dude that every time he shoots it, honestly, when it's open, I expect it to go in.
No, for sure. Yeah, I mean, it never looks bad coming off his hand. Like, it always looks good when he releases it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And it's just that type of skill level, it didn't exist in big men back then, and it didn't exist in high school players. And it's whether it's a trickle down effect or it's a trickle up effect from the result of just the way that the game is being played. And it's obviously a completely different game. And yet, you know, you look tonight and typically you would think Milwaukee makes 16 threes, makes five more threes, outscores the Suns by 15 from the 3-point line. You would think, man, they're looking pretty good. They probably have a good chance to win that game, which is, again, going back to what I said right off the top, it was a It was a weird game from a statistical standpoint, and looking at some of those things, the free throw disparity, the fact that Milwaukee shoots 44% and makes 16 threes and really isn't in the game, and the great game that Paul and Ayton had, Giannis coming back and being, again, he was, for Giannis, it was probably an average game, which is as much as Milwaukee could probably be have any right to be able to expect. But it's just that the game is so different. Overall, the game is so different than it used to be. And I think this game was kind of a microcosm of that. You see Chris Paul as a point guard orchestrating and shooting threes and getting Phoenix into the kind of looks that they want to get, and Milwaukee kind of stumbling through and turning it over at key times. And just whenever they made a run, it seemed like they had something went wrong, either a missed shot, or the one stretch that we haven't talked about that I thought was really important was Cameron Payne had that stretch of, I think he might have had like 8 of 10 points in a little stretch there while Chris Paul was getting a rest. And he hit a deep three, and he had a couple nice drives to the basket right at about a time where Milwaukee looked like they might have been climbing back in. And if he misses a couple of those shots, maybe things are different. But Payne's been, I mean, what a reclamation story that guy's been.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody could have seen that coming. And, you know, credit to him, who has for sure worked on his game, you know, to become, he knew what he had to do to get back into the league, the type of player he had to be, accepting a position of a bench player, of a backup, and, you know, coming in. But, I mean, his jumper now is smooth. I mean, you watch him, and his first step is, you know, arguably is you know, quick as anybody in the game. You know, he's got that left-handed layup he'll just throw up there. You know, I don't even know how it goes in half the time. He's high off the glass. It doesn't matter who's guarding him. He's made a huge difference for Phoenix. Huge difference. As a guy who can come in and spell Paul for those few minutes each game, and they actually don't miss a beat as far as scoring goes. He's not the point guard that Paul is, but he's every bit as a scorer of still trying to, you know, get him some buckets during that time.
Yeah, he's been really, really good for them, and he was again tonight. And that's all you can ask for from your bench players, is you get just enough out of them, or you get just enough out of one or two of them. Like tonight, you had a good campaign game, campaign and Cam Johnson. Like, those are the two guys, you know, together they scored 20 points. And that makes all the difference. You know, you look at what they got off their bench, and it helped. I mean, having those two guys play well certainly helped. All right, let's wrap up by talking about what we think is going to happen in game two. Just a quick thought on what the result will be in game two. And then I think we already kind of talked about how we feel the series is going to go. But just share your thoughts on what you think is going to transpire in game two, and then what you think is going to happen for the series. Make an official call.
You know, I think that I think Milwaukee is going to come out and probably take game two. I think it'll be this a lot closer, you know, basket for basket the whole game. I wouldn't be shocked if you know, no lead was more than 8 or 10 points the entire game. I think Milwaukee is going to come back and do just enough to squeak out a game two victory. Whether that's Giannis stepping up, whether it's, like you said, it's Middleton and Holiday, you know, finally getting together at the same time and making it tough for Phoenix defensively. I think they're gonna come back and take game two. I'd be shocked, not shocked, I'd be surprised if they didn't. If they go down 2-0, that would be surprising to me. I think, just like you said, the way this game was a little deceiving, tough to get a handle of. I think there's a lot more positives that came out of for Milwaukee. Then it would, you know, you'd look at it, you know, seeing the score, you think, oh, you know, there's not a lot they're going to take away. But they shot themselves in the foot a lot of mistakes, like you were saying, ball handling mistakes, just bobbling the ball. With what Giannis came back with, I think they've got a lot of positives going into game two. And I think they're going to take game two. That's my guess.
All right. I think Giannis goes for 30 plus in game two, and I think you get a bounce back game from Jrue Holiday. 4 for 14, 0 for 3, 0 for 4 from three tonight. I think Holiday comes back and has a much better game in game two, and I think the combination of those two, Middleton, who knows, if Holiday's going to play well, then I guess I got to say that Middleton may not, but I think a big game from Giannis, and I think Holiday bounces back with a solid game, and that puts Milwaukee over the top. I think Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton have more quote normal games, closer to their season averages, and the combination of improved play from Holiday, improved confidence and health from Giannis with another 2 days to recuperate after this game, I think Milwaukee takes game two in a close game. I don't see it being a Milwaukee blowout by any means, but I think Milwaukee takes a close game in game two. And then I wouldn't be surprised if they split when they go back to Milwaukee, and then it comes back to Phoenix 2-2. And then, since I'm going to say Bucks and six for the series, I think Milwaukee takes game five, and which means I guess they win two out of three in Phoenix,
right.
And then come home and win game six in Milwaukee to take the series. So that's how I see it going. Who knows if I'll be right? I've been wrong many times before. Although I have been on the Bucks since the beginning of the season, so I've at least been right on that front. So we shall see what happens. Game one of the 2021 NBA Finals is in the books. Popster, thanks for joining us tonight. Really appreciate it. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.